Maybe we should get going here. I'm tired of our study. I told myself last night, no, I'm done with it. We've done this long enough. We're going to do something else. I hope. But then I get into this stuff. But I do think this will be the last of the seeds part of our lesson, because the next, I always say what I'm going to do next, and I never do it. Have you ever noticed that? Because I get to thinking better. But the next layer that we really want to go into is the seed Christ. So that section of our study will be a biblical study. You know, this is about the Bible, but this is going to be a biblical study, because we'll end up with Christ. And I want to go back to the Old Testament and start out where the promise was made and trace it through till we get to come to Christ. So I know that's going to be an important study in terms of that aspect of it. You know, we're not supposed to be political in our church. I mean, that's good advice. But, you know, we're living in a day where there's nothing that's not political. And that's different than it used to be. So I'm not, if I say things I try to even avoid parties, but you can't avoid them sometimes anymore. So I do that with that kind of explanation. Because when you get around to it, whether it's religious or political, the left is the same thing. And, you know, they're built on the same foundations. And sometimes we use the, and I'm going to use the word liberal, and that's going to have a context of our culture, our day, our theology, or the lack of it. And so it needs to have a definition. What is liberalism? And so I put up on the board to your left basic ideas of liberalism, and that's probably not very scholarly presented, but it covers these three areas and probably more. But the idea of tolerance, that people need to be tolerant, and that now this be into politics or into religion, you know, it's either way, you know, it got to be tolerant. And by tolerant, I mean that there's no absolutes. Whatever you want's fine. In fact, whatever you want to do, I encourage you to do it. So we get into morals, we get into, you know, sexual identity, get into promiscuity. You get into everything that's amoral. I mean, there's no such thing as a moral person in liberalism, because it's whatever you want to do. So that's why I say the word tolerance is, I can't judge anybody, and no one can judge me. And the next one would be peace, which has to do with finally get down to property. Because if I have something and you want it, we'll probably have war. So if I don't have anything and you don't have anything, there'll never be war, because we'll be at peace, because we're not taking it from each other. So the idea that we have peace, we see Nebraskans for peace, definitely a liberal idea, because we're not for war, we're for peace. Therefore, there's no property, you'd own nothing, there's nothing, what else can I say? There's nothing you can own and nothing that a nation owns. Everything in the world belongs to everybody and nothing belongs to anybody. It's just no borders. John Lennon song, remember, Imagine, no borders. And you see that going on today. And then we have justice, and that's a manufactured word. Justice means that everybody gets a fair shake, which means they get the same thing, except they always have some that are exempted that administrate this justice. They're exempted from this. But they say justice, you take away from those that have and give to those that don't have, and that's called justice. And we have the same outcome for all. Those are kind of the three things. If you want to kind of remember what is it that is liberalism, think of those three words. That'll help you to sort of quantify it, because sometimes liberalism just means your enemy. No, the enemy here or the other side actually has a definition. And again, liberalism in our culture is different than you'd see liberalism in Roman Catholicism. That's a totally different setting. So liberalism there would be away from Roman Catholic teaching, so they're more liberal. So the idea of liberal is very, very wide. So when we talk liberalism in our culture, in our country, and in theology and in politics, we're pretty well agreed that on these definitions here. So if you start on the top, you start with religious or political, doesn't matter which one, and you chase it around. On one side, you have the Jewish, and that's why we're going to do this today. We have the Jewish side, and then we also have the Christian side. And we say, well, the Jews are liberal. That's kind of my lesson today. why are the Jews liberal? And then on the other side, you say, why are the Christians liberal? And if they are and they maintain it, they'll end up exactly the same place. And I maintain that they're under a curse because this is what God has said. Once you abandon God, at the bottom there, once you reject God, then you are bound to be in trouble. There is no recovery once you reject God. And that's the state of liberalism today, whether it's political or whether it's religious. All right. Now, that's not how I started my lesson, but that's how we're going to end the lesson. We're going through the Bible as a contract. That hasn't changed. We're not going to go through all of this because of time. And we want to know, if it is a contract, how did this contract work out? We decided that the contract was written literally. It was meant to be understood literally by the word meanings and definitions and the way language is used. It's to convey meaning that is objective for all. So we said it 4,000 years downstream from God's covenant to Abraham, and we have 4,000 years of history to look at how it worked out, and our conclusion so far, it's worked out really quite well. In this covenant, land, seed, and blessing, there are many seed, which has to do with the people, and the people are hated. When we know the real reason, and we don't even have to have the rest of our lesson, is the underlying cause is because God said to Abraham, I will make you a great nation, I will bless you and make your name greater. When we have that statement from God, now think about literalism, they're going to reject God. Anything he said, what are they going to do with this statement? They got to reject this statement. They can't let it stand. So how do you reject the statement? You attack the estate. You attack the statement with no weaponry except verbal weapons. That's where it starts. So we have the hatred of the Jews, and so we have the underlying reason why they're hated is because God chose them, their chosenness. And I was going to spend a lesson on this question itself, and that's where I got bored after a while. You understand that it's because God chose them that they are hated. What else can you say? But there are reasons, and one of the reasons I have time will do this. One of the reasons is that the Jews believe in one God, and they don't believe in a Trinity either. And that's why the Christians hate them. Quote, Christians hate them because they don't become Christians. So the best thing to do with those people then is hate them and throw them out, take them out of the Bible. All right. So there are other reasons. You know, that the chosenness is another reason. Another reason today they're hated is because they're trying to establish their own nation. How dare they do that? After all, nationalism is not in vogue today. Globalism is. So they're hated for that reason. And the real primary reason is that they serve a God. And by doing that, they say every other God is false. So when the Jews start calling my gods, I'm talking to me as the general public out here, is God, the Jews call my God a non-God, I'm mad. So I attacked the person that made that statement. I'm a Roman. The Roman said, you can have all the gods you want as long as you don't exclude ours. And when the Jews said, I exclude yours, then they were mad. All right? So that's probably the primary reason from a surface point of view that the Jews are hated because they insist on a single God. We call it the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is one. Shema is the word for that. And the first word of this is hear. Shema means hear. So here, the way the Jews do their Bible books, the first word is the word, name of the book sometimes. So we have Shema is the first word of that statement. So we call it the Shema. So let's say the Shema, we understand they talk about one God and they don't like the Trinitarian God of Christianity. Reject it, reject Jesus as Messiah, as deity, because that would violate their Shema. All right, so we have the question about why the Jews are hated. So first, this is where I got stuck yesterday. It was brought up in this class, so it isn't like I made this up. Why are the Jews liberal? And I've wondered about this for a long time, and that's why I do this stuff. I get to wondering about this myself because there are answers to some of these questions that if I never figure them out, I'll never know, right? So we're going to look at it. Well, good enough. There's a nice book written by Norman Podhoretz, he's a Jewish guy. Why are the Jews liberal? He's talking about himself. So we're going to work through my lesson. He's still alive in 1930, he born, so it'll make him, 88? Yeah, 88, thank you. So he was, about him, initially a staunch liberal. Poteritz moved Commentary, a magazine that he published or editor of, to the left. He moved it to the left, away from this stuff, towards conservatism, when he took it over in 1960, and moved it to the left. However, he became increasingly critical of the new left and gradually moved rightward as the 1960s wore on. Now, this is a Jewish guy, all right? We're not talking Christians. We're talking about a Jewish guy. By 1970, he was a leading member of the neoconservative movement. To liberal Jews, these liberal, and I think the word here is democratic position. I took that word out there, but that's what he was saying here. To the liberal Jews, these liberal positions are a mark of their attachment to yet another high ideal. High ideal. This case, the ideals of, on the board, tolerance, peace, and justice for all. High ideal. Now, what's the justification for this from their point of view? The Torah repeatedly instructs us, the Jews, to care for the widow, orphan, poor, and the stranger. It is fundamental to Judaism that those who are blessed with more have an obligation, not a choice, to help those who have less. Now, that translates into political action by voting for minimum wage increases, against privatizing of Social Security, all the things that we hear out there are on the political and the liberal divide. They are on the liberal divide. And I went through a litany of those things, and they want to pass laws that would support all that stuff. Somebody gave me a list here an article by scientists that are going to sign. Scientists have signed some kind of document that would indicate that sex is not determined at birth. For example, it's a liberal idea because no one is intolerant. And how can you ever tell a person who's grown up as a man, considered a man, to be a man when he gets grown up if he really thinks he's a woman? I mean, we laugh at that, but you know this guy is suing in England over the idea of his age? You know, he's 69 years old, wants to be 49 years old. That's no more absurd than this is. Is it? And in fact, I wonder if the guy isn't doing it tongue-in-cheek. All right, so we have this promotion of these values, quote, hate that word, and it's on the justification that we help the poor. That's, again, a Christian thing, because out of the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the poor. Don't worry about the rest of the verse. Since we're editing the Bible, we just take what we want anyway. So this translates into voting so forth in that direction. But the rabbis disagree with this. Now, remember, we have an intramural squabble here. The Orthodox, that's the black hats, I wanted to show you that. Orthodox oppose the politically correct liberal positions taken by most other American Jews. By the way, this is mostly American Jews. And precisely because these positions, those on the board up there, conflict with Jewish law. Jewish law forbids sex outside of marriage, sex between men. It permits abortion only to protect the life of the mother. It takes a conservative view of the role of women. It prohibits suicide, and here we get really Jewish, except when the alternatives are forced conversion and incest. I just took it as he has it, and positive euthanasia, positive euthanasia, what does that mean? You put somebody to death? I think that's what that means. So they're against that, all right? So we have all these things that we would say are conservative values, sex outside of marriage, blah, 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 all that through that, against abortion, big one. So they're against that. So some of the Jews are against the liberal Jews, so conservative Jews against liberal Jews. Now, Poteritz's book, who is critical of his Jewish family, makes an interesting point that the Jews are politically leftist, yet in their political left, yet it is the political left that is anti-Semitic. I have noticed that many, many times. Under normal conditions, that would move anyone away from the left. But as it is, they have not moved, but in some cases, doubled down. Like join your enemy, you know, type thing. Jews are clearly on the left of American politics in their partisan loyalties and voting preferences. Now here we get into the politics, because you only know what a Jew will do. Not only. One of the indications what a Jew will do as a group will be how they vote. All right? That's why you have to get in politics a little bit. So Jews are clearly on the left of American politics in their partisan loyalties and voting preferences. Jewish political behavior continues to contradict many commonplace assumptions that people tend to vote their pocketbooks or their self-interest. We are forced to conclude that in the continuing to vote for the party, Jews have in the last few decades been voting against their own self-interest. And I shake my head. This is what I've seen, and you've seen it too. Why do they do these things? Don't they know it's destructive to their own people? All that stuff is destructive, and they vote for it. So Jewish conservatives or neoconservatives like Poteritz see this as irrational. I just did it for you. But Jewish liberals, which is to say most Jews, take pride in it as a mark of their refusal to put self-interest above demands of social justice. So in a sense, they sacrifice themselves to a cause, because the cause of liberalism is bigger than they are. But it's a suicide mission, of course. All right, so this social justice, what it's on the bottom here is that everybody, you know, gets an equal whatever. So social justice is equal outcome for all, which in that process you have to take and give. You have to forcibly take. If they don't give it up, you have to take it by force. Okay? And no one has to do anything at all to produce anything. So as long as those that have something can give it, give, and others can take it, they're fine. And when it runs out of that to take, then what are they going to do? Well, I never thought about that. So committed to the leftist agenda that even when the leftists make the Jews a target, the other leftists make the Jews a target to be eliminated or silenced, the Jews still do not abandon their commitment to the ideals of tolerance, peace, and justice for all. It is, you know, as we'll say in a minute, it becomes a religion for them. So as we've noted, that their religion is to make the world a better place. That's kind of I've told you that before, that's what the Jews generally say, that we're here to make the place a better place. Well, how do you do that? Well, that's how you do it, according to them. So we have noted that their religion is to make the world a better place. To do that, to that end, the Jews, I say blinded by reality, you know, the reality blinds them apparently, because a blind person can see reality. I mean, a seeing person can. So the reality they can't see. So to that end, the Jews have notoriously supported Marxism. Marxism is basically what we have on the board there. But what was it about Marx's idea that proved so seductive to so many emancipated, freed Jews? Paul Johnson, historian, you know, History of the Jews, written long book. Paul Johnson shrewdly remarks that to them, Marx's Das Kapital, the book, became a new kind of Torah. The Torah is their Bible. So the Marx Kapital book, Das Kapital, became their Bible. And so it did in the sense, their embrace of Marxism and had the feel and the force, not of an abandoned Judaism, but in favor of a wholly secular philosophy, but rather than a conversion from Judaism, it was to another religion. So they sort of abandoned Judaism and go to another religion. Now, noteworthy, it is a religious system, and this is why it is so attractive, think of it. Noteworthy, it is a religious system that is void of God and Christianity. Or we might say word of God, void of God and a Trinitarian Christianity. So they run from that to go to Marxism. Now remember, there are not many choices here. You know, there are not three or four choices. You either go to God or you go away from him. And when you decide you're going to go away from God, where are you going to go? You know, it's kind of like the guy that's thrown off the boat in a flood, and all that's, you know, floating by him in this river is debris and trash, and it doesn't matter which one you're going to grab onto, anything to save you. And that's kind of what the Jews have done. They've given up God, and they have taken to the first thing that came along, so to speak, first thing. What came along indiscriminately, because they had to have something to save them, they thought this thing would save them, and it ends up being something that would kill them. So Marxism has often been interpreted as a translation into secular terms of Jewish messianism. Messianism. I'll read it again. Marxism has often been interpreted as a translation into secular terms of Jewish messianism with history. Now, if you are a, what do you have, Orthodox, Reformed. Okay. Orthodox, Reformed Orthodox, I'm going more liberal, to Reformed. The ones we have in Lincoln, I think, are Reformed. They're the most liberal. They think that the Messiah is not a person. It is an era, a period of time. See, it connects with this. So Messianism is connected to history. Now, you got to stretch a little bit because I don't understand how a son of David can be an era. But if you've made the mistake of going away from God, anything looks plausible. Marxism has often been interpreted as a translation to secular terms of Jewish messianism, with history replacing God and the proletariat, that's the working class, substituted for the children of Israel, with a vehicle through which deliverance from all evils, this proletariat, these working class people, that's Marxism, will ultimately come to everyone and deliver society. They're buying into this because they're saving the world. Remember, they came to make the world a better place. They missed the real boat and they picked up a piece of trash and floating downstream with it, and it's going to take them to destruction. So as a result, the Jews are firmly committed to permissive social codes, sexual codes in particularly. The gap between Jews and others on the scale that measures attitudes towards non-marital sexual behavior, marijuana, you know how that is sweeping the country these days? I mean, what, like Colorado, what's Colorado going to do? I mean, once this is in place, who's going to vote it out? Because everybody that likes it is going to go there and vote against. All right, with difficulties. And divorce laws is quite substantial. 58% of the Jews had liberal responses on these items as opposed to 31% of the non-Jews. So the Jews are almost twice as liberal as the regular population is. In like fashion, these huge gaps separate Jews from others on abortion. Of all people, Jews are for abortion. 86% versus 44%. Again, twice. The control of pornography, you think, well, they certainly would stand up against pornography. Almost, again, twice as much support for pornography as from the rest. There are a number of Jewish writers, conservatives, who have pointed out this self-destruction. As it is the usual case, these voices do little to move the needle to the right. Because once you've committed to leaving God, you're going to have to go the other direction. It doesn't matter what else is said. Now, of course, if they did move to the right, their salvation would still be lost. We understand that. They need Christ as Savior. They can't be saved otherwise. So the Jews are a study of blindness and unbelief. Now, there are some conservatives. We just read from one. There are some who are unbelievers without resorting to the left, as we have seen. And they are very much a minority in a sense. They sit on a fulcrum that could be pushed either way. So now we talk about Reagan's era. I had to use his name because that's what his name was. The conservative person, president, candidate for a while wasn't Jimmy Carter. Why did Reagan's election fail to increase the Jewish vote? When it came to Reagan's vote, the Jewish vote for the Republicans went down, not up. The less important of these two involved the widespread Jewish fear of fear of the religious right. Now, I'm going to have to explain this a little bit here. They didn't want to vote for Reagan because of the fear of the religious right that was attached to the conservatives on the political party. This fear had been calmed, that Reagan was going to take the country towards Christianity. The Jews voted against it. Okay? That makes sense. I mean, pervertedly, it makes sense to them. But this fear had been calmed to some degree during Reagan's first term by the failure of the campaign for prayer in the schools. I don't remember this, but he apparently tried to force prayers into schools, which I'd be against. But it's a conservative view, to win support from either the Congress or the courts, and that didn't work out. So the Jews said, well, maybe he really wasn't going to do what I thought they were going to do after all, so maybe he's not so bad. So why did Reagan's election fail to increase Jewish vote? I said 39-31. Well, it was because of the fear of Christians. But Fear of Christian was reawakened with a vengeance when the story got around that copies of the Bible omitting the Old Testament and the containing only the New had been distributed to delegates at the Republican National Convention in 1984. So again, they thought that the political party of the right was going to take everything to the Christianity. Now, I've got to stop here and think a little bit. There is a historic foundation for this fear. I've told you this many times. Maybe not yet, but I will. So they, the other side, the Democrats, gleefully seized upon it as a proof positive that the Republicans, as well as Reagan himself, had been taken over by the religious right, whose secret agenda, including removing Judaism from its place of honor in the Judeo-Christian tradition. That's what they feared, that the Christians were going to throw out the Jews. Has that ever been done before? I want to get to that. That's been done before. Why would the Jews be afraid it might be done again? So it's a waste of breath for us Jewish supporters of Reagan to argue again that, this is Poderek talking, it was a waste of breath for us Jewish supporters of Reagan to argue that, yet again, that the vast majority of the evangelical Protestants disavowed any such intention. There weren't enough of, quote, us, because we're not political animals anyway. So we must observe that the Jews are threatened by any form of Christianity. Remember the suicide? They'd rather commit suicide than convert. Then it would be acceptable. Wow. Rather than do as conservatives like Poderitz suggest, they do not see evangelicals as the enemy, but ought to accept their support, when it ought to be obvious that they are the only friend the Jews have in the whole world. Some of them have recognized that already, but not the left. But for them, friendship is not an option, and they continue to make love with the left to their destruction. We bring up the Jewish plight for a couple of reasons. Well, always watch the Jews for prophecy and anything else we can learn. We have made the point about high IQs of the Jewish people. We have also seen a high IQ has nothing to do with seeing something in simple faith. In fact, it seems to act in the opposite. The Jews demonstrate that. Can we not see in the Jewish family the irrational unbelief that characterizes the rest of the world? Why I'm doing this to some extent? They're just a picture of the rest of us. This is instructive in that we can observe the phenomenon at a distance. We're not Jews, but we can watch them do it, and see the deadness of the fallen human will. When anyone is presented with visible truth, the blind commitment to the false makes full sense. So this morning I get up. I've been getting up early in the morning on Sunday morning rather than just getting here on time. And I've been using this time to go over my lesson. Well, this morning, as a result of a discussion I had yesterday with somebody, I got to thinking about something else. That's why I call extra, extra, read all about it. This came in late. This came off the wire late. When preparing these notes, there was, in my mind, a dis-ease about the Jews pointing their fingers at the Christians and not trusting us. I'm uncomfortable with that. So why are they blaming us for this or for whatever? Why are they blaming us to have to go liberal? Probably no explanation for that. But it does seem to be a valid point. Remember the Christians, we had this in our lesson here, remember that Christians were the most severe persecutors of the Jews in European lands, ended with a Christian named Adolf Hitler. We'd say, well, he's not a Christian. As far as the Jews are concerned, he's a Christian, right? As far as he's concerned, he was a Catholic, and he was. So perhaps Christians have some bridge building to do. Think about it in the group. And I remember my apology to Yossi. I teach two classes. I don't know what I tell to each one of them. But I apologized for the Christianity to our Jewish guide for what they had done to the Jews over the centuries. I felt better when it was done. I don't know if he did. I'm not sure he understood what I said. Being blinded and all that, I mean. So then there is this part we have in Genesis 1, 12, verse 3, we have not talked about. This is what I talked about yesterday in this conversation. We've not talked about the part where it says, and the one who curses you, I will curse. Now, tell me, where did that happen? Or when does it happen? Or how does it happen? Give me examples of when this happens. I give you the time when God says, I'm going to bless you, and I give you all the blessings. Now, I want to know where the curses are. Well, we can think of things. So I said to myself, have we stumbled on a possible meaning of the I will curse? Now, this is besides the Syrian, you know, Syrians took Israel. They got cursed for it. They got wiped out. Babylon took Israel. They got cursed. They got wiped out. And it goes on down, right? Rome's gone, right? All these nations are gone, and the Jews still stand. So with the cursing of these nations, has occurred. Now, here's what the difficult part is. The church historically has been cursing the Jews. The church historically has been cursing the Jews. You understand that? That's called anti-Semitism. All right, so now what? So take one look at the mainline Christian community, including Catholic and Protestant. They are all anti-Semitic. And in spite of their apology, even the Catholic Church in 1960 made some kind of a protracted or whatever apology to the Jews for what happened in Europe. They're still anti-Semitic. So, because they're anti-Zionist. Anti-Zionist means anti-Semitic. You deny somebody a homeland, that's denying the people a place to live. That's anti-Semitic. So they have all become, as the Jews, these Gentiles, Christians we call them, they have all become, as the Jews, Romans 10, 9, 10, 11, cut off from Christ. The Jews are cut off from Christ. The Gentiles are cut off from Christ. They have abandoned the gospel. And are they not receiving the same judgment as the Jews, which is the curse of liberalism? Because once you leave God, what's left? And whether you're on the right side, left side, the Jewish curse or the Christian church, Christian curse, you end up the same place. Liberalism is a curse because it denies everything God's ever said. And whatever God has said, that's what's attacked. And that's why I put all that up on the board, because we identified with those. And sometimes, well, that's just a different point of view. It's not. It's an attack. It's an attack on the very God who created us. All right. Now that is 35 minutes after the hour, and I got 5 minutes. I'll do this. The end is near. Thank you, Lord. Not near enough. Ultimately is a demonstration of the human heart, this process, watching the Jews. It's a demonstration of the human heart. And God's remedy to save it. That's what we learn out of this. I mean, if we think we can figure out, noodle this out and avoid something here, never mind. That's why I think we should vote, and God takes our vote and does whatever he wants with it, all right? But we can't change the outcome that God has determined. You know, one of the comforts I had this week is, I don't know where you are on all this stuff either, but in the time when Israel was recognized as a nation, it was from we usually count from after World War I, but actually it started way before that. And it culminated in 1948, May 15, when they declared themselves a nation and Truman recognized them for their sovereignty. And we were studying on Friday morning group the details of how that all worked out. And there's so many places, so many hundreds of places where it could have gone wrong and it wouldn't have worked out, but it did work out. So I remind myself, the same God that superintended that history, superintended this week. I knew that. You knew that. But remind yourself, that's how it is. So whatever it is at the end, we don't see, like we can see Israel at the end of that process. But there's something at the end of this process. It may be the rapture. It may be something else. But whatever, when it's done, we'll say, look at that. Wow, I never thought that would happen. Oh, my goodness. God must have been in charge. So that is the kind of situation we're living in under now. So this whole study, the human heart is an object of study with the Jews. And the only remedy for it is not political. It is God's remedy to save it. And it's the same kind of God that did what God did for Abraham in the world, and that he must be the first actor and an unconditional actor in the restoration of the entire race. God was going to do that, and we're going to be spectators of that, I trust. So the Jews have precious promises, but they must wait for the new covenant to be enacted before there's international turning to Abraham's God, and that will be part of our study down the road. And I think that's the meantime where I think I'm going to stop. Yeah, well, I'll just finish it with this. The hatred of the Jews has been humanity's greatest hatred. While hatred of other groups has always existed, no hatred has been as universal, as deep, or as permanent as anti-Semitism. And one of the reasons the Christians hate the Jews is because of their presence and what they want to do, and it's irrational, absolutely irrational. Okay, so maybe you got a comment.